Welcome to dinner, everyone. I'm glad you're here. Before the conversation gets rolling, let me tell you a little bit about how we got here. Every year in November, I start thinking about what my theme for the next year will be, inspired by author Gretchen Rubin, who documents her yearly process on her podcast, Happier. Having a word or a phrase as my theme or mantra helps to guide my thinking and hopefully my actions for the year. A group of my friends do this too, and every year we get together in December for a holiday dinner and we share our mantras. It's great fun. This year, my theme was the year of us. This one rose to the top because I've been thinking a lot about community. The last 10 years have done a number on how I perceive my neighbors, some family members, my fellow citizens. It's been rough out there. Some of my deeply held beliefs about the nature of humanity have been challenged. It's partly what led me to find UUCL. I'm thinking about what it means to be in community. What do we owe each other? How can we better care for each other? Can we bring our culture back from the brink of toxic individualism? Then, of course, there are the findings of the famous Harvard study of adult development, which showed that the single biggest predictor of long-term health and happiness was the strength and quality of our relationships. Well, I want long-term health and happiness. Former Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy said, "In a world selling us loneliness and calling it freedom, choosing community is how we stay human." I want to choose community. I want to stay human. For direction and insight, I looked to two women who are doing incredible work in this space and decided to invite them to dinner. Let me introduce you. Priya Parker is a master conflict resolution facilitator, a strategic advisor, and author of the book, The Art of Gathering, How We Meet and Why It Matters. She also has a new book coming out about the art of fighting. There was a big article about it in the New York Times this morning. She studied organizational design at MIT, public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School, and political and social thought at the University of Virginia. Mia Birdsong has spent more than 25 years as an activist and writer. She is, among many other things, the founding co-director of Family Story, where she lifts up a new national story about what makes a good family. And as vice president of the Family Independence Initiative, she works to improve the lives of low-income families. Her book, How We Show Up, Reclaiming Family, Friendship, and Community, shares the stories of everyday people building resilient communities of care. Now, you are at a slight disadvantage here because this dinner is taking place inside my head. But fear not, I am going to give you the play-by-play. I've tried to make it clear when I jump in, but most of this conversation comes from direct quotes or condensed thoughts or paraphrases taken from interviews and the writings of both Priya and Mia. This is their work, not mine. Our dinner conversation is just the tip of the iceberg. It felt almost impossible to narrow down their scholarship into one short sermon, and trying to cover both of them at once was probably a poor decision, but their work meshes so beautifully together. If you find any of this at all interesting, I highly encourage you to explore both of them further. You will notice themes of community, justice, connection, and interdependence, and it is all very UU. So, let's begin. Priya, can I ask you why gathering is important? Parties are fun, but are they necessary? Absolutely, she says. I'll start by saying that I define a gathering as any time three or more people come together for a purpose with a beginning, middle, and end. So it's not just parties I'm talking about. It could be a party, or a wedding, or a meeting, a dinner, or a graduation ceremony. Really, any time we are in a shared social experience with other people that affects how we think about the world. One big lesson that we learned from the pandemic is that how we come together is how we live. It's how we mark time. It's how we decide what is important. What we choose to gather around is how we know what we think is worthy. In that way, gathering is culture shaping. Often, the first people we gather with in our lives are family. Mia, you talk a lot about the definitions of family and how the predominant narrow definition of family in American culture is actually damaging. So let me ask you, what makes a good family? I ask people this question all the time, says Mia. And the first thing everyone says is, can you guess?
Love.
They talk about people who will be there for you, who care for you, who will support you. Nothing about structure. No one has ever said to me, what makes a really good family is when you have a man and a woman who are married and they have biological children. It's the function of family that's important, not the structure. There's misogyny, racism, homophobia, and exclusion built into the elevation of the heteronuclear family as the gold standard. When we expand our view of family beyond the nuclear, Mia says, we can start to create interdependence outside of that definition. There are countless models we can look to and learn from in American queer and Black history. People who built love and community in the face of rejection, or because of their experience being forcibly separated from their people. But chosen family is available to everyone because it's ultimately based on friendship. I have expanded my understanding of what's possible when we get rid of the narrow confines of how we think about family and what a friendship is and what it's for, Mia continues. I think about the people I consider close friends and invite conversations with them about the culture of our friendship. What are the expectations that we have of each other? What can we count on each other for? What boundaries do we have? Consider asking yourself, what do I want and need from the relationships in my life? And what am I open to giving? This can be so hard, I jump in. We prize independence in this country. We can even feel shame for needing other people. We don't want to be a burden. We don't want to appear needy. We don't want to owe anyone. We're also afraid of intruding. Let me know if you need anything, we say. Well-intentioned, but non-committal. Yes, giving is risky, says Mia, and it helps to be specific about the things you can offer. Don't be afraid to intrude a little. People can always say no, but they might appreciate it more than you can imagine. I have a dear friend, Mariah, says Mia, who has type 1 diabetes and happens to be single. People inside couples have the luxury of a built-in person to help you manage illness. But what about everyone else? One day, I realized that I had no idea what to do or say if I had to speak to an EMT or ER doctor on her behalf in an emergency. So I asked her. And in response, Mariah shared detailed information about what managing her condition actually required, drew up a document with important information, and she even shared it with a few other friends as well. Now she has multiple people who would be able to properly support her. This one vulnerable inquiry made us closer and her safer too. When we allow someone to be generous to us, we both benefit, Mia says. There's a way in which creating a cycle of both giving and receiving support lets us know each other more deeply and creates intimacy. It feels restorative. Being vulnerable strengthens relationships. Many of us are ready to step up and respond with assistance in an emergency, but Mia asks us to think about offering that kind of generosity in everyday settings. Not just, how can I save you in your hour of need, but how can we create ease for each other on a regular basis? What conditions make us feel full and fed? Creating community is creating culture, practice, ritual, social norms. What does that creation need to look like so we are not just filled up as a response to depletion, but instead live a life that is less depleting. So in addition to finding ways to show up for each other, let's talk a little bit about how to build meaningful gatherings. Priya jumps in here. I cover 8 different rules in my book, she says, which include don't be a chill host, create a temporary alternative world, cause good controversy, and accept that there is an end. But here's the first and most important one. Your gathering should have a purpose that is specific, unique, and disputable. We often conflate category with purpose, but they are not the same thing. And let me say this, she continues, not every gathering needs an explicit purpose. Sometimes you just want a casual hangout, and that's totally fine. But if creating meaning is important to you, you need to first decide why you are gathering. The key to defining the real purpose of a gathering is to keep going deeper, to move from the what to the why. Ask why you're doing it, and every time you get to another deeper reason, ask why again. Keep asking why until you hit a belief or a value. For example, why are you having a neighborhood potluck? Because we like potlucks, and we have one every year. Why do you have one every year? Because we like to get our neighbors together at the beginning of the summer. Why do you like to get your neighbors together at the beginning of the summer? Well, I guess if you really think about it, it's a way of marking the time and reconnecting after a hectic school year. Aha. And why is that important? Because when we have more time in the summer to be together, it's when we remember what community is. And it helps us to forge the bonds that make this a great place to live. Aha. And safer. Aha. And a place that embodies the values we want our children to grow up with, like that strangers aren't scary. Aha. Now we're getting somewhere. I love this, says Mia. This is a perfect segue into my work on community and how building community naturally results in increased community safety. It makes me think of Ajeris Dixon, who helped start the Safe Outside the Systems Collective, SOS, at the Audre Lorde Project in New York City. SOS was created to organize with queer and trans people of color to create community-based strategies for safety. Part of the work Ajeris did was helping people map out their networks to see where their connections overlapped with others' connections, and where there were gaps, and where people lived or worked close to one another. The opportunity to build with potential allies came when one of the people inside the network started getting harassed on their way home from work. Ajeris worked with them to build relationships with the people who were usually present along the route they took home. This work was daunting because it meant coming out to strangers, but ultimately, it was effective. Time and time again, they saw people who were literally saved by the relationships they built. This also makes me think, Mia continues, about the conversation around abolition, otherwise known as defunding the police. Often, this topic is shut down out of hand because people are scared of what the absence of police and prisons might look like. But what the abolition movement is really asking us to do is to think about the things that actually create safety and well-being for us. And most people know the answers. People need food and housing, access to healthcare, education, mental health services, love, and connection. Exposure to the abolition movement, she says, was my entry point into thinking about what we really need to keep communities safe. We need to address harm in a way that actually reduces it, in a way that is reparative and protective of people who experience harm, but that also works with people who are perpetrating harm so that they don't continue to perpetrate it. And that kind of transformative justice only happens well in the context of deep community. Yes, exclaims Priya. The Red Hook Community Justice Center in Brooklyn is an example of an organization doing exactly this kind of work. Its founders have reimagined what the justice system might look like if it considered the whole person and their background, and how their success might impact the entire community. And they have built out their physical space and proceedings to reflect that purpose. Community building with a capital C is deeply important. But what if we also just want to know the people around us a little bit better? Priya happens to offer us all kinds of suggestions and formats that we can implement to help us, connect in her book, on social media, and on her podcast and website, like the 15 Toasts module or the Night of Seven Songs. She reminds us that intimacy isn't usually built through opinion sharing. It's built through storytelling, through sharing our experiences with one another. I think it's really important for us to remember, continues Priya, that all gatherings, personal and professional, public and private, are invented. We literally make them up. We can build things based on what we actually need. Sometimes what we need is to mark an event in our lives that doesn't have a pre-made ritual associated with it. We can design our own. Likewise, Mia's work shows us that we can define who our people are and how we want to be together. She also reminds us that while it's important and necessary to reach out and build bridges with folks who are less like us in identity, ideology, or understanding, it is equally as important to build networks of people with whom you can be your whole self. Living in my bubble, she says, is important for my well-being. These are the people who push me to heal and grow and with whom I feel safe enough to do so. It's the place we practice world-making, creating some version of the future that we want to live in now, in the present. Living into the future, creating the culture we want with the people closest to us, it's a declaration of love and commitment. It's not always easy. Inconvenience and accountability are the price of community. As Kate Bowler says, this is the hard work of interdependence, figuring out where I end and you begin. Community as a verb. The work of belonging takes us all.